Context, Caroline Casey. So here we are. It is New Moon Radio, and so it is more than perfect to welcome fellow Sun in Libra, Moon in Virgo, Judy Svafrir, psychiatrist, astrologer, author of the forthcoming, in January, book Sacred Psychiatry, Bridging the Personal and Transpersonal to Transform Health and Consciousness. And we go, yes. We are crafting our alchemical vessels. As many of you know, I've just been so in love with the fact that in all languages, the word vessel means container and boat. We go, oh, that's great. So we're crafting our alchemical vessels in which we shall then set sail into the wild seas of unfurling. Now, the new moon will be tonight at 6:40 p.m. West Coast time, at a particular degree of connecting with our lineage, right, to bring alive through fresh expression, and then we put it in our craft for personal collective guiding, most fortuitous for now, as Mercury, Hermes, Legba also stations to go direct tomorrow at 1:21 p.m. West Coast time. And it's also going to be tomorrow evening Rosh Hashanah, so more than perfectly. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you so much. So excited to be here with you.
That's super wonderful. And we must address that some genius of order is scheduling us, that as we noted, but I didn't even note the precision. When you were born, the moon is at 19 degrees Virgo, 39 seconds. And right now, the moon is in Virgo at 19 Virgo, 39 seconds. It's exact. It's amazing.
Right. Incredible synchronicity.
Right. Well, let's dive in with the moon in Virgo, which we both have, the witch's moon, the writer's moon, right? And I like, well, and it is so precise. It's just wonderful. Again, some genius is scheduling us. So I think of Virgo, part of all of us, feels great when it feels that it is an agent of the beautiful order that suffuses creation. And then Virgo can feel neurotic when it feels that the only order that exists is what it creates, because then it's, you know, must buy five apples and save the world. It's too many things, right? So so you and your dedicated work, very much an agent of order. We can go through the many things that you're putting on our work table. But does that resonate with yourself?
It totally resonates. And I loved what you said about, like, resonating, like being part of the beauty and the mystery and connecting with that rather than kind of the small self trying to create it themselves, by themselves.
Right. Well, that's why Virgo is called the ruler of ritual magic, the micro to the macro. And, you know, you speak of the desirability of setting altars, and especially for all of us now, tonight, it's a fresh start. It's a fresh new cycle. Just the little micro to macro. And, you know, when overwhelmed by the enormity in the world, it's like, well, let's just move this around here and put cornmeal of protection around the Capitol. And anyway, so it's play. And if somebody's grumpy, we put a little drop of honey on the statue that represents them, you know, kind of thing. But so, yeah, so your book and your dedication alters. Tomorrow, Mercury does go direct, and it is when Rosh Hashanah begins tomorrow evening. Might you want to say anything about the most desirable and liberating way to think of Rosh Hashanah?
Yeah, I mean, the Jewish calendar is a lunar one, so the holidays always fall on a new moon and a full moon. And I mean, new moons are always seed plantings, and the fact that it's Rosh Hashanah, which means the head of the year, it's also an especially potent new beginning. And with the Virgo new moon, it's all about holistic healing and health. I mean, that's like sort of quintessential Virgo. And with this Rosh Hashanah holiday, I mean, it's an opportunity for people to, again, dedicate themselves to healing the world because it's the birthday of the world.
Right. And there's another wonderful pattern. We are pattern tracking beings that in your chart, Saturn quintiles Jupiter, the 72-degree angle, one of my favorite things. And in the sky right now, Saturn quintiles Jupiter. So it's like, oh, well, Judy Safir has been working on this since 1956, right? And it's a beautiful thing. Let's hum it, you know, for all of us. So the way I learned quintiles way in prehistory was irresistible eloquence, you know, and it's for us all now in the chart of now, and for you, you know, it's dedication, Saturn, you know, inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. Is that, can you think of it that way?
I love that. When we were talking earlier before the show, you talked about dedication as another word to use instead of addiction. Oh.
Yes.
And I love that a lot as well. And yeah, if we could all just dedicate ourselves to
yeah. Well,
to what
it's
we love.
My rascal self. I'm sorry, say what? All dedicate ourselves to?
To what we love and what we care about and what the world that we want to imagine into being.
Yes. Right, and you know, Mercury, Legba, power of language, Virgo, Mercury and Virgo, one of its favorite signs, you know, that language, crafting, and our friend Max Dashew says craft means power from dedication, so language, crafting, and yeah, just as you say, a powerful dedication and a wondering, you know, what are we willing to be a voice for? How are we willing to be a voice on behalf of what we love in the human cultural realm? Yeah, and so...
What a great intention for the new year, Carolyn. You know, like that's like the most beautiful intention for the new year.
That's great. Well, and it's in our guiding chart. I love Mars is in Libra overhead. Its image is... You know, coal miners emerging from a dark pit into sunlight. And we go, yes, the whole culture, that would be good. And it's got a quirky angle to Jupiter and Taurus. Libra is social Venus. Taurus is animistic nature Venus. You know, and our assignment to connect them, again, to be voices for and energetic agents of, you know, what we love and what we're willing to partner with in the whole realm of nature and biomimicry and all. Well, my rascal self, you know, playing with words, when people say, I'm addicted to fill in the blank, sex, you know, cannabis, or not, that doesn't really fit. I don't think cannabis is addictive, but I go, oh, perhaps it means dedicated. I've been dedicated to sex. It's that idea of kind of in a Pluto way going, well, what does this want to be underneath it? And I love my colleague Sean Patrick O'Donohue. He says when people come to him and say they want to quit smoking, and he says, not so fast. And he says, go off and think of what do you get out of this, right? Without recrimination, what do you get out of this? And then go think about, you know, when do you smoke, you know? And then remember that everything is sacred and tobacco is a great protector, you know, and so then the next time you smoke, thank grandmother tobacco for giving you protection. And then we make a smoking mixture of herbs and we start to just filter it out. And so the tobacco is less and less. But I love that approach. You know, it's like,
what do
you
get out of this? I do too, because there's so much consciousness brought to it rather than some kind of automatic habitual desacralized.
Yeah. Right. And you know, and again, you know, Maria Sabina, a great Mexican, you know, medicine woman, said, you know, tobacco protects protector, protects people from bad gossip. And I go, oh, that's very witty. In smoke-filled rooms, they're trying to dissipate what they're generating. Oh, that's very cute. So that theme of, you know, dedication and to track things down to where they, you know, are deeply. So you mentioned in your book, you know, altars, yes, divination, yes, crystals, Robert Simmons, right? And I go, hi, I remember him, a buddy. And then, you know, flower essences, that, and you've begun to make your own. And then you mentioned pine and walnut and psychedelics. We'll get to ketamine. But pine, yes, pining is a wonderful thing. Do you want to give voice to pine?
Well, the flower essence, it can be so helpful because so many people are suffering from guilt, and much of the guilt is unconscious, that is left over from fantasies from childhood, when a person felt as though everything that was a problem in the family had to do with them. But they go on as adults to continue to feel guilty about things and to self-sabotage and to dedicate their lives to suffering. And pine can help shift that because it's a remedy that helps dissipate unconscious guilt.
Yeah, and then Diana Beresford Kroger is very big on pine and says, walk into a pine forest, you always come out smarter because of the pining. which I like that. And then she was also in recent show that we did, she says, and women, if you love your men, take them into a pine forest or better the redwoods and have them stripped down as much as is possible given societal parameters, and have them walk through that, you know, and then when they get home, not to wash because the pining or the aerosols will prevent prostate cancer. We experiment with everything. And maybe it's wrapped up with guilt.
I thought they were maybe erotic.
Maybe erotic.
I thought maybe I thought the pine would maybe make it more erotic.
I don't know about that part, but maybe that's part of intelligence. If we get smarter, we get sexier. right. And then, you know, since she was saying that, he began to go through the, you know, cannabis realm, and it's also opened up now. I don't know how it is in Boston where you are, but it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's totally, it's, you know,
legal.
Available.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so in the Virgo realm of, like, so many detailed precision things, so many plants, so eager in precise ways. So I go into the dispensary, and I go, pinene, do you have cannabis with pinene? They go, we sure do. Here you go. And it's like, oh, it smells wonderful, right? And then you talk about walnut, which is an astringent, right? And Diana Beresford Kroger says, and women, take walnut and crush it, and it smells like lemon. It really is delicious. And rub it on your forearm, and it will prevent breast cancer. And we go, okay, we'll try many things, you know. But you love
it's
walnut.
It's interesting,
for
though.
What quality?
Those essences, like, they don't have any of the chemical properties. It's all vibrational.
That's
it's like
true.
Homeopathic. So, like, right. the pine doesn't have any pine scent, or the walnut doesn't have any astringent properties. But walnut is wonderful for transitions when anybody is, and I mean, given what's going on in the world, everybody could be taking walnut because we're in the midst of a huge transition as a planet, you know, like something is dying and something is being born collectively. So everybody could be taking walnut to support them. But it's also good for people who fear the judgments of others when they are trying to go on their own path. So it's good for, you know, holding to your truth.
Well, just due to the power of radio magic, which is extreme homeopathy, you know, we can all just imagine, everyone, a little dose of walnut, you know, for transitions and for relating to the world and society in which that's interesting information, but not constraint, whatever is going on in the family or the social group. So a little bit of that. And the pine to alleviate guilt. I don't. Yeah, these are, you know, these complexities into which you delve and guide. I love that we love the ninth house as well, and your beautiful moon exactly now, so exciting, right next to Jupiter. And I love that I've been working with so many people with Jupiter and Virgo, which is a wonderful thing. It's like, and you've just expressed it. It's the knowledge that small things have a big effect. Small things tell big stories, right? So so you're pretty acute, you know, well, the essences, the micro things, the whatever, and it is tied to your good detective work. Do you think of yourself as an astrologer, psychiatrist? Part of that is detective?
Well, you know, there's this idea that if you don't really understand what's going on, it's very hard to recommend a strategy to be helpful. So in that way, I'm like trying to get at the root of things in order to like craft an approach that's going to really be transformative.
Right.
So in that way, yes.
And we do love.
In that way, I do. It is like a detective.
I think so. I think a culture doctor detective. I'm just playing with your chart here, but and then, you know, ketamine is all the rage, right? These things become fashionable. I have not gone to a ketamine studio, right? But so many people are. It's like, and what is your understanding or experience of what that is?
I'm having an amazing experience with it. An amazing experience with it. I just did a training in order to learn how to use it in my practice in May. And I've now, you know, done about, I don't know, more than 20 sessions with patients. And like two of the people that I've done it with completed like a series of six sessions. They're just transformed in terms of like so much less depressed so quickly, and just really like being able to express themselves more authentically than at all before they did the medicine work with me. But I do it in a very ceremonial and sacred way. Like, I don't, like, there's ketamine clinics that have sprung up all over the country that are just like these high-dose IV infusions, and there's no attention to set or setting. There's no integration work done in between the sessions. And so I'm using lower doses, and we meet, you know, once in between each session to process, you know, what happened and how to make sense of things together. And it's transformative. It's very powerful. I haven't had a tool like this before. I mean, tools that I've had are effective, but they take like a long time. And if somebody would call me and they were extremely depressed, I would be hesitant to take them on because I don't really want to prescribe pharmaceuticals and the kinds of things that I had to offer prior to the ketamine really take a lot of time. And also they take a lot of motivation on the part of the patient. So like if a person is going to like follow like an anti-inflammatory diet, or if they're going to do a mind-body practice that takes 40 minutes a day, they have to be able to be depressed, like not so depressed that they're able to be motivated to do those things. But with the ketamine, it helps them become less depressed so that they can participate in doing those things. So it's pretty profound.
And how does it, what's the actual protocol? I've had one extreme example over, I'll just leave it over in the backstage realm, but with you, is it something you take orally? Is it a shot? Is it a
yes? So there's different ways it can be administered. So the way that I do it in my practice is with a lozenge. So I get the I put it in an order for a lozenge to be compounded by a compounding pharmacy, and the patient brings the lozenges to the session, and it's not. Like, you have to experiment with dosage, because it's not like if you weigh a certain amount, this is the right dose of ketamine. Like, people are very different in terms of their sensitivity and tolerance. So you have to experiment initially to find a dose that is appropriate. So they put the lozenge under their tongue. After I do a whole ceremony, I call in the directions. Call in the ancestors and the guides. We set up an altar. They bring things to the altar. I bring things to the altar. We might draw an oracle card. And then and we have a clear idea about what is their intention, you know, like what would they like to have happen with all of this. But not always what you want to have happen is what happens, but that there is an intention. And then they put on an eye shade, and there's beautiful, like, journey music. And they put the lozenge under their tongue. And after about 15 minutes, I tell them that they can swallow. And then we made another 10 minutes. And then I ask them, you know, how they're feeling. And we decide, given how they're feeling, whether or not to have an additional booster dose. And then they do the same process with holding it under their tongue and swallowing after 10 or 15 minutes. And then they lay on the couch and they journey, and it's quite short acting. It's like the very psychedelic part is like 45 minutes to like about an hour and a half. And we talk the whole time, and I'm scribing, you know, like what we're talking about. And it's really amazing. I combine it with this mind-body program called the Gupta program, which is it's a neuro-rehabilitation program of the limbic system of the brain. And so it's like a brain retraining program. It's a very structured program. So I'm asking people to do the Gupta program, you know, not when we're during the ketamine sessions, but when we're not meeting, to be working with the Gupta program daily. And part of the Gupta program is recalling a time when you felt really well and like peak experiences, or a feeling of belonging, or just feeling really healthy. So I'm asking them, when they're in the ketamine session, because very often they feel like it's tremendously heart opening and they're feeling like a sense of connection and oneness and sometimes bliss. And I'm asking them to imprint that sensation so that when they're doing the Gupta program and the brain retraining, they can recall that state that they were in with the ketamine. And I think it's just incredibly synergistic the way the two are working together. So I'm learning. I'm very excited about it, but I'm learning, you know, and it's all pretty new.
That's great. So what is ketamine?
Oh, gosh, it's a dissociative anesthetic. It's been around forever. It's on the list of World Health Organization's essential medicines. Like, it's very safe. It has a very... causes very little like respiratory suppression, and it's a medicine that's very used very frequently in pediatric anesthesiology. It was like a buddy drug in Vietnam. Like, soldiers would carry it in case their comrade was wounded, because it in higher doses it's really anesthetic. It like makes people feel, you know, detached from their bodies.
Right. No, that's great. It's a dissociative anesthetic. There's a phrase that's really interesting. So it's a pharmaceutical ally.
It's a pharmaceutical. It's not a plant medicine. It's a pharmaceutical.
Right. And again,
but
now we're back to...
Wow, magical, you know?
Yeah. Now we're back to...
Like, during my training with the ketamine, I had a great ketamine training. One of the people who was training us said, people treat ketamine like it's the red-headed stepchild, like it's inferior, and you're just using it because it's what's available when MDMA or psilocybin is not legal. But she disagreed with that, and I am finding it incredibly heart-opening, you know, and people are having, you know, really spiritual, sacred experiences with it. But I think it has in part to do with like set and setting and the way we're setting the whole thing up with doing ceremony beforehand.
No, that's so important that you're bringing that to the journey realm, to the psychedelic realm, to the therapeutic realm, the set and setting. So crucial. And once again, you are dreeing your weird, wonderful phrase, meaning playing your role in destiny, the moon, Jupiter, the tradition that you belong to, really, of, you know, large effect from small things, micro, you said lower doses. And I remember hosting Karen Saunders, a wonderful colleague at KPFA, Herbal Highway show, and she said, all those ayahuasca heads out there, she said, you can microdose anything. And she said, you know, the small dose has a different effect. And she said, you know, a small dose of, you know, mullein or mugwort or anything. And then she said, a friend of hers had been given a piece of a whale baleen that had washed up on shore, and her friend made a little alcohol tincture. And Karen, completely credible, said all you needed was like two drops and you were in vast oceanic whale mind.
Oh, wow.
Right? So the journeying in a small way. So, well, that sounds great, right? Neurological reprogramming, and we will, you know, honor these things and dive more deeply after our break, but for a little bits now, because we want to get to, yes, we want to get to energy vampires what is it? Oh, malignant narcissism. There we go. And how to dissolve that? It's a small task on our altar right now to dissolve, malignant narcissism, and where we've outsourced our autonomy to malignant narcissists, and we look forward to you guiding us into that realm. But yeah, and so the ketamine, that's a really great guiding explanation. Thank you. I have that because I've only experienced it in an extreme way where, you know, humans are like, no, we want to go directly and do maximum and intense. And that was intravenous injection of DMT and ketamine. Quite a different experience. Oh. It's like, whoa!
Yes, that would blast you into outer space.
Or inner space, or close to death.
Or inner space,
right,
yes.
And it's like, ooh. Yeah, pretty much. I had to consult with Terrence McKenna on,
I was just going to say, isn't about ketamine at all, because, like, I only just learned about it, you know, like, in May, and the book was already, like, pretty much written at that point.
Well, we're psychically folding it into the book. That's good. And we will honor many great things in the book. I mean, I love your. We're all at a point right now to rededicate to our own health by the definition of what that is, and you've got a great checklist that we will honor. And I was taking notes. The whole theme of food and inflammation, very big theme. You know, and then the addiction theme, right? And then the diets, the paleo autoimmune diet. We'll explore all these things, as well as getting to energy vampires and malignant narcissism and dissolving that. We have a rich next half hour. But I loved also your going through the supplements, and I was like, yes, fish liver oil. Crazy about fish liver oil. Me, the dogs, the cats, everything fermented. We do fermented cinnamon fish liver oil. Yeah, berberine. I want to come back to that because that was, you know, somebody did my blood work and said, most of America and you want to watch out for being pre-diabetic. I'm like, what does that even mean? I have no idea. And we'll come back on that too. And he said, here's a pharmaceutical.
A
I go,
one.
No. He goes, well, then how about berberine? I'm like, whatever it is, sounds good. So we'll come back
every
on
day.
Yeah.
That's a great, it's
well,
a great
three times
herb.
A day, I think is what I was told. So, do you want to do a little, just 1 minute thing on berberine, and then we'll take a break and come back to everything?
You know, like people who are diabetic used to be, or are typically put on metformin, which is like a chemical that increases insulin sensitivity and decreases insulin resistance. But berberine, which is an herb, is equally effective and has great capacities to like stabilize blood sugar and to, you know, make it so that your blood sugar isn't spiking all the time, which is really a big contributor to inflammation.
Right. Yes. So this is a powerful time. We're going to take a very short break in a moment, but it's with Robbie Robertson and Twisted Hair, and we wave to him. He's gone backstage, but it's a powerful spoken word dynamic that suits us as we are all here, the new moon tonight at 6:40 p.m. West Coast time, Mercury stationing, you know, again, direct tomorrow. So it's a powerful time for everybody to gather in their wits and make their dedication. My perfect for now, having her exact lunar return at this moment, guest is Judy Tsafrir. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's a beautiful name.
Yes, you are.
Oh, good. And she is an astrologer and a psychiatrist, and we'll be right back after Robbie Robertson inspires us. Here we go.
This was the way of it. Let the story fires be lighted. Let our circle be strong and full of medicine. Hear me. This is my dream song that I'm singing for you. This is my power song that is taking me to the edge. This is rock medicine, the talking tree, the singing water. Listen, I am dancing underneath you.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. That was Robbie Robertson, all homage to Robbie, who's gone backstage. And that's from his album for the Native Americans. But it's so, this is the way of it. Let our story fires be full of medicine. You know, it's a river, it's a chant, it's a medicine story. It's what has been forgotten, right? That's on our table. What has been forgotten that we must remember, you know, listen. And so perfectly, my wonderful guest this hour is Judy, let me see if I can do it twice, Judy Tsafrir, I love that name, whose book forthcoming in January, Sacred Psychiatry, Bridging the Personal and Transpersonal to Transform Health and Consciousness. She's a psychiatrist and an astrologer. They so belong together. It's really wonderful. But Robbie Robertson, I want that on my ketamine soundtrack, right? So, or Journey soundtrack. I love that music so much. But now we go to micro and macro. We come back. We were just honoring the small things that really have a big effect, like berberine. Is there anything more you wanted to say about berberine?
No, it's, I mean, if you Google it, you know, it just has like tons of benefits, you know, like in terms of just metabolically protective. And, you know, particularly as people age, they are more prone to having insulin resistance. And it's just, I mean, some people take metformin as like an anti-aging drug, but I think that berberine is like equally effective without being like a, you know, chemical compound, you know, a manufactured
right.
chemical
and
compound.
And even just the name berberine, it's wonderful.
It sounds Moroccan, like Berbers.
Berbers, that's right. So, right, and we will say your book, which can possibly be ordered, but it's coming out in January, but it's a good checklist going from the micro to the macro, you know, to be a cultivated human. I like, a friend was asked what his definition of maturity was, and he said to have access to all of one's resources. And it's like, that's pretty good. That's a good start, right? And that's part of what your book, Sacred Psychiatry, you know, is about. We have so much to tend and steward and take care of, and so many skills and talents, and that's certainly our shared love of astrology and our shared being a Sun in Libra, Moon in Virgo person. and the new moon tonight is in Virgo, you know, ruler of ritual magic, micro to macro. And I just wanted to bring up two of my favorite Virgo things. Dion Fortune was a mentor, an ancestral mentor, a remarkable woman in Britain, wrote many things, and wrote these novels that are not great literature, but they are great. My favorite maybe is Moon Magic and her character, Morgan Le Fay Morgan. And just at a certain point, so her setting up her altars and her temple, it's always near water, and she comes to a point where nothing's going right, just everything wrong. That's the sort of difficult side of Virgo, like, that's not right. And then she makes a dedication. This is something we could all do. She places a humble vase of flowers on the altar with the dedication that it would serve as an invitation for Isis to return to the world. You know, and as she's feeling grumpy, and she walks in and she sees the moon, the little crescent moon that begins Rosh Hashanah, shining through the window into the humble vase of flowers, and she feels this incredible downrush, like, pfft. And she goes, it didn't matter that I was grumpy. You know, the dedication trumped everything. And in the language of the adepts, I was back on my contacts. Right? I love that phrase. Right? So anyway, I love that as a little micro thing going, we're grumpy, never mind that. The dedication, the Saturn in Pisces part of all of us, the dedication trumps surface aggravation. And to dedicate, you know, a humble vase of flowers or whatever we put on our altar, it's always been that idea, you know, come on in to animate this, right? And at new moons and maybe Rosh Hashanah, which is the new year, again, you're guiding us. So that's great.
You said that she was back on her contacts.
Yes, it's a British occult phrase. You know, back on one's contacts. Mm-hmm. Like when I said, "Oh, look, your book is good. Let's talk." Okay, be radio. Oh, the moon is exactly where it was when that kind of contacts. Like, ooh,
okay,
there's a larger
okay.
order. There's a larger okay. order of which we are a part, and
yeah.
it's like, oh,
I was not familiar with that expression.
Right,
but I love that, you know, I love that, and I do feel like, you know, like when you're feeling out of sorts or grumpy or just sort of collapsed into your small self, that when you do something that connects you with the larger order, that connects you with the sacred, it takes you out of that, and is expanding and uplifting.
Yes. Right. Well, and again, what have we forgotten that we must remember? It's not just us, right? And the essence of ritual was always a kind of invitation, you know. Right. Well, it's what she said, you know, for power to come into the world, and our participatory rituals, you know, come on in. You know, at equinoxes we're approaching, and solstices, and you know, what's going on there? Oh, literal all over the world for 25,000 years and more. O literal and symbolic light of sun, come on in and illuminate this writing or this painting at the back of the cave, what we don't usually see. This is the community story our village, our community, our civilization wants to bring alive. Come on in and animate this. That the purpose of art, well, here we are, incarnational agents of Venus as fellow Librans with the moon in Virgo, going very specific. Purpose of art is, you know, is a kind of dynamic invitation to cooperate and to invite, you know, and that's where I'm also enthused to go to the part of your book. It's a whole chapter on energy vampires. There we go. And because we've outsourced a lot of our Saturn autonomy to, you know, incompetent energy vampire kind of beings. So there's many, many ways to play. And I did ask you, you know, that you said, I said, do you know the show, What We Do in the Shadows? And you said, I think I've watched maybe one episode. And it's like, oh, it's pretty clever, because there is a great character who's an energy vampire. He feeds, you know, and it's just by boring people, right? He goes, and then when my childhood and the thing, whatever, and he feeds. And he says, and if I'm ever low, all I need to do is go on the internet, you know, to feed. Because he said, it's amazing how really in a few minutes you can have hundreds of strangers just furious with you, and you can just feed on that. Anyway, it's very witty. Colin Robertson, Colin Robertson. Oh, I have to just stick in one more thing. And at one point, the other vampires are thinking Colin Robinson's getting too powerful, right? He's just draining by boring people. And he turns himself into three versions of himself that then begin to argue, and then they all bore each other to death, right? Anyway, so that was very witty, how the Dementors take themselves down. But energy vampires, you're working a lot with that in relationship, and you connect it to this diagnostic term of malignant narcissism. Is there a Virgo condensed way you might define what that is?
Let's see. It's somebody who does not do unto others as they would have them do unto themselves. It's somebody who does not understand mutuality and does not understand that a relationship is about the needs of, if it's a dyad, the needs of two people. You know, it's all about their own needs and their own wants, and the other person is only there in order to meet those needs. And when a person is in a relationship with someone who's like that, it is so stressful, and it's impossible for them to get better, even if they're, you know, having the best supplements and the best mind-body program and doing all the exercise and the best diet. They'll never get well if they're in a relationship with somebody like that and it's causing that kind of stress.
Right. They can change. I think it's okay to reference, because it's a witty reference. So I was in millions of years ago, in a relationship with a young person whose name was Wynn, and seeing a sacrocranial guy, and he saw what stress I was under, and he said, I'm going to write you a prescription. Here it is. Lose Wynn. And I go, that's very witty. That's very witty. And I will say, Wynn has gone backstage, you know, and but Wynn did change. It's something that you remark on in your book, that it's very challenging,
very unlikely,
for narcissists.
It's very unlikely.
But he did. Let me just finish this sentence, because the only reason I presume to bring up a personal name, but Lou's Win was so good, is that he did go on to become a kind, good person. It took maybe like 30 years, you know, but he did become a kind, good person. So I just want to put that
and
on our altar
of
desirable mystery.
Do you know that? Do you know how that happened?
Well, I think it was he from appearing to be, you know, dedicated to community well-being to actually being that, and deep immersion in sacred music, and also he, well, you know, we're in all kinds of things. What does our culture encourage or discourage in men? He was very beautiful and charming, and that's. There's a low incentive to cultivate other qualities. And part of it was age, and he became less beautiful, or more truly beautiful, but less obviously beautiful in a glamorous way. And so the old games weren't working. And then he, you know, I think, you know, when we dedicate to something, sacred music or language or healing practice, you know, we can, you know, kind of fart around for a while. But after there's a certain amount of dedication, I think, you know, the gods of that discipline say, all right, this person's been farting around, or they were a malignant narcissist or whatever, but now they've put enough time in, we'll train them. I think every discipline, whether it's, you know, poetry or radio or healing or whatever, I think there's a presiding intelligence, you know, and after one has put one in, it's like, I don't know. I've been to many bad rituals, right? Really kind of hokey and annoying. But I remember at one point going to a hokey ritual going, oh, man, this is so cheesy. But then there was a shift. There was an absolute shift. And it was as though the backstage gods or the Loa, you know, said, all right, these humans are, you know, just whatever it is. But they've put enough in. Now we're going to make it real. And it was where it became real. And I just liken that to with... a great astrologer, Jim Lewis, we were in New Orleans, and he was an old New Orleans hand, and we went to the New Orleans Voodoo Museum, and he's like, this is a tourist place, and I'm not a tourist. And I go, there was a thing that said, you know, pay $5 and go into this room for a voodoo altar. And he goes, I'm not going to do that. I'm no tourist. This is just nonsense. And I go, hey, I'll spot you, right? And the minute we walked into the room, it was like, whoa, it's real. It's real, right? And I think, you know, at a certain point, I mean, I don't know, the reason I want to toss it back to you also about malignant narcissists and how they rarely recover, but I have that example of, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
you know, and do we have tight definitions or, you know, don't know. But it is a huge collective theme, right? We have outsourced to, you know, malignant. And when we were talking backstage, and I said, you know, you said the essence of it is, you know, not caring about others. There's no mutuality. And I go, well, now we're back to anarchism. And Kropotkin, who will be featured in next week's show, I just have to say, next week I will be coming to you from WDRT Community Radio in Viroqua, Wisconsin, connecting to KPFA, all community radio stations. And it is a fun drive, but we're going to make it really fun. Don't miss this episode where it turns out that Viroqua, Wisconsin is a hotbed of anarcho-entheo-astro-animism. And it's like, all right, that's what we're doing. And mutual aid is one of our chief things in the book by Kropotkin. So that will be an exciting radio experiment, fun drive, making it fun next week. There we go. But back to you. So mutual aid, you know, well, now we're back to the beginning. You're in your book, the introduction, you know, it's a quote from Credo Mutua, right? South African Sangoma, I suppose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're all one. We're all one thing.
Right, but the mutual aid, that's like I, thou, you know, like when a person is like an energy vampire, there's not, the other doesn't really exist except insofar as they service their own needs.
Right. But we are in a great opportune time. All these Virgo planets opposite Neptune and Pisces. Neptune and Pisces says, solve a coagula, dissolve and reimagine. You know, dissolution is the secret of the great work. So even just a wishing spell ritual out there for everyone, you know, malignant narcissism or whatever that is, into the cauldron, dissolving it out of the human repertoire. You know, why not? Dream big,
yeah.
Play fair.
Transform it into mutual aid.
Yeah, exactly. What does it want to be? Mutual aid. Which is, I love, you know, my friend Deborah Falmouth living in Syria and Vermont, but she says the word, you know, shalom, peace, is not the absence of conflict, it's the presence of oneness.
Mm,
and it's that,
beautiful.
You know, mutual aid, you know, is self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, collective well-being is self-interest because we're all in this thing together. And that's the beautiful way your book begins. And then just a little bit, it reminded me also of there's the great section in the Mary Poppins books, not the horrible movie that P.L. Travers hated. P.L. Travers was a true mythological scholar, founded Parabellum magazine, and Mary Poppins was a shaman, not Julie Andrews. But there's just a very short passage where, because, you know, the quest begins with a question. So P.L. Travers had terrible parents, right? Okay, we can relate. You know? You can relate. And so she formed this question in her heart, what will take care of life when the humans are not doing it? And it's that question that guided her to go around the world studying feminine shamanism. So Mary Poppins is not Julie Andrews, Jim and Jimmery. She's like not to be messed with. She's a serious person. But there's this one passage pointed out to me by my friend Annika. Thank you, Annika. I recommended the books to her because they're very trippy. And it's Mary's birthday, and she takes the children to the zoo. And at the zoo, the animals are roaming and the humans are in cages. Right? And Mary has a cousin, the Hamadryad serpent, and he takes his shed skin, and the children and the animals all dance around, sort of cages and not caged, you know. And he says, this is what I have to say to you today. Tonight, the small are free from the great, and the great protect the small. It may be that to eat and to be eaten is the same in the end. We are all one, we of the jungle and you of the city, all from the stars, all moving to the same end. And
that's
I remember
beautiful.
When I read that going, I remember when I read that as a little girl, like when I'm 6 or 7, going, yep, that's how it is, right? We don't need to write down to kids anyway, so I just wanted to bring that into play, going, right.
I love how you brought the stars into it.
Yes,
you know,
right, we're all from the stars.
We're one with the moon and the stars. We're all stardust.
Right. Well, doesn't it hearten you? Doesn't it hearten you? I mean, if I get grumpy or Virgo moon hypercritical, which can happen, but then just to remember, like, everyone has a Neptune, right? Everyone has a dream. Everyone has a vision of wholeness for well-being somewhere in there. It might not have been spoken to. Everyone has a Uranus trickster ingenuity. Everyone, it's like, it's in them.
Mm-hmm.
It's in them all, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
whatever we speak to. But, yeah, right, and then because this new moon soon upon us, right, 6:40 p.m. West Coast time, you know, 9:40 East Coast time, it is at a particular degree of connecting with our lineage, and your book is Sacred Psychiatry, available in January, right, but bringing the personal and personal to transform health and consciousness. Yeah, well, I'm so glad that you are boldly astrologer, psychiatrist, right? They really do belong to each other, right?
Totally, totally. Hippocrates said the physician that doesn't understand astrology or doesn't practice astrology is not really there's no business calling himself a physician.
Excellent. That's right. There we go. Right, and again, you know, called to its, you know, exquisite form. I mean, everything meaningful has been trivialized and bandied about, and everything can be liberating or imprisoning, everything, you know, including astrology. But you'd brought up, you know, again, your love of Chiron, little planetoid that we know. I do not call him the wounded healer, but many people do. But he is the first mentor. He's the centaur mentor. And he does found the Asclepions. And I love that.
And he was so holistic, you know. He knew about so many different things. He knew about herbalism. He knew about astrology. He knew about music. He knew about. He just was like, holistically including everything in his teaching and in his healing.
Yes, and I do. Yeah, I've been to the ruins of one of the Asclepions on the island of Kos, where astrology was taught, and astrology and dreaming. And, you know, I love in this time as Mercury State, you know, notes fall out of notebooks. You pop up and we go, Moon and Virgo, Sun and Libra, that's wonderful, let's dance. And then something, you know, self-assembling, whatever we need, kind of just falls off the shelf. So there's a wonderful book called They Have a Word for It, you know, and it opened to one of my favorite places. It goes, Istikara is Arabic. It's a request for spiritual or practical assistance in the form of a dream. And it says, English has words for prayer and hope and concentration, but Arabic combines and transcends these three concepts with a word for the psycho-spiritual art of solving problems in your sleep, Istikara. You know, and then wonderful. It talks about the Muslim tradition of dreaming and Asclepios. A large proportion of the Greek population went to one of the 300 or more dream temples. Right, the Asclepions. Chiron founded those, at which the god Asclepios was said to appear in special healing dreams to offer relief from illness. It goes on and on, but we're out of time. I want to offer you the last any word or wish or prayer or here we go.
There was just one thing that came to me, you know, when you said that everybody has a Uranus, everybody has a Neptune. My residency training director, Leston Haven, said, you open a person up and everybody has a heart and everybody has a liver and everybody has kidneys, but everybody is so unique and so different, you know, yet everybody has the same things too.
Right. And we honor that. Yes. So, thank you very much for the Moon and Virgo dance. This is wonderful. Our guest this hour, Judy Safrir, a psychiatrist and astrologer practicing in Boston. Her new book, soon out, Sacred Psychiatry. Thank you so much, Judy. And we shall continue to Moon and Virgo Kahoot, perhaps.
It was so fun. Thank you, Carolyn.
That's great. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, of course. And I will be coming to you live from WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin next week. Fun drive. We're going to make it fun. It's anarcho-entheo-astro-animism. Woof, 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 woof.